Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John tells us about the perils of recording an audiobook and unveils the latest theme music for his Quote of the Week segment. Meanwhile, I write love poems for a girl I'm not even interested in and tell the story of the time bathtubs got banned. Plus, a conversation about the problems with modern content creation and how legacy artists like the Beatles would have handled it. Today's episode is not sponsored by gym memberships. For just $40 a month, you could lose up to 31 days. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
We know you're still assembling your presents from Christmas, but you know what? It's time for a nice post-Christmas edition of Talk About That. A time, Johnny, to reflect, maybe take a break from your Christmas break.
Yeah, and like you don't have to watch the Christmas movies anymore.
Yeah, I like them.
Oh.
Maybe some bowl games are coming on.
You can still watch. There's not a lot of New Year's movies, you know?
No.
What would the New Year's movie be? When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah.
That's it.
Is it, though?
No, probably not. Yeah. But that's the one I always think of.
It has all the seasons or all the holidays in that movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, but at the end, when they finally get together, it's Auld Lang Syne is playing. And
that's true.
It's a great... That's a really... I mean, if it's possible for that to be an underrated film, which I guess it's not possible.
No.
But if you're one of these like newer generations and you're like, ugh, that old thing, go check it out.
Yeah.
It's very well written. It's a great story. Very funny. Very great. I mean, really crisp dialogue.
Yeah,
it's very... really write dialogue like that anymore, but anyway.
Yeah, their chemistry and the pithy dialogue was good.
What Christmas movies do you think are, like, just complete classics? Like, you wouldn't touch a frame of it. Like, when they made The Grinch with Jim Carrey, although I liked Jim Carrey, I was like, oh, they're going to mess it up, because the perfect thing about The Grinch was Boris Karloff's narration, right, and it was 20 minutes long with commercials. It was kind of perfect.
Yeah.
How are they going to make a two-hour movie out of this? And I'm sure, like, you know, like our youth group kids, their generation, they love the Jim Carrey version of The Grinch. And I'm sure it's great. But my favorite thing, I like weird things about things. And you remember things when you're a kid. My favorite thing about The Grinch cartoon is when he comes down to join the Who's, because he realizes they're all still singing. Christmas came even without boxes and bags and tags and... etc. Right. He says it all in ring, real rhymey form. And he comes down the mountain with all their presents back, because he's going to give them their Christmas back. And then they let him carve the roast beast and all that. But as he enters the town, they're all gathered in a circle singing as they were. And if you remember the cartoon, like a sentient door, the crowd just opens for him. Like they swing open like four hand-holding people go, huh? Like a gate for him to slide his... And I always thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
So go back and watch the old Grinch, and you'll see that they're holding hands in a circle, and then like an odd collective doorway, they
Isn't
just...
Isn't it funny, though, like the suspension of belief, though, because that you would find that funny in a story about a creature that's called a Grinch.
Yeah, but the fact that people could become a door...
But they weren't even real people. They were Who's.
Well, hold on a minute, John. Are you saying they don't deserve Christmas?
No, I'm...
They're not even people.
It reminds me of...
They deserve what happened to them.
When Sadie was little, we'd watch a show called Wonder Pets.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was a talking duck.
Yeah.
A talking turtle.
Sure.
And a talking hamster, I think.
Okay.
And they would, like, go and rescue other animals when everybody would leave the schoolhouse.
All right.
And so, like, they were just normal during the day with the kids. And then when the kids left, they turned into these superheroes. It's for very little children.
Kind of like a Toy Story vibe where when the adults aren't looking, our lives begin in our adventures.
Right. And it's not high graphics.
Like, I wonder what that teaches kids, by the way. Like, as soon as adults turn their head, that's when your real life. You know what I'm saying? That is kind of a weird message that we're sending.
Yeah.
I tell you what, this Hollywood, we've got to stop it.
Johnny, then.
Sorry. Let's be alarmist.
Well, they'd have a little song, you know, okay. Wonder Pets, that, you know, this whole little
that was
song.
Wait a minute, how does it go?
And so, I don't
that
remember
was it?
All of it.
It just repeated Wonder Pets? That's a chant.
No, that was part of the song.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember. An Animal's in Trouble. It was Johnny, I don't remember. It's been a long time. My daughter's 15. So anyway, they get into what they call the flyboat.
Sure.
And it's this little thing they get in, and it flies out of the schoolhouse.
Okay.
And so I'm watching this with my father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Sadie's little.
Yeah.
We're watching singing, talking ducks, hamsters,
right.
and turtles.
Yeah.
They're going to save an animal in trouble.
Uh-huh.
They get in their flyboat. They fly in the little door of the schoolhouse. As they fly towards it, there's a little door, like a hatch, that just opens.
Right.
And they fly out. And my father-in-law goes, how did that hatch open?
That was the bar you couldn't. I can't go there.
So the talking duck, turtle, and hamster didn't get you.
No.
It was the opening of the door. Yeah. It's funny what we. So it's not the fact that there's a Grinch on a mountain who stole all their Christmas presents. It's that.
It's just a funny, like, they could have written it anyway. They could have just had the people slowly dissipate like a group of people would. Like, oh, let's make room for him. Let's spread out. But they went, they just pivot like a hinge, like.
Yeah.
Four people on a door hinge opened up for him to bring
maybe at
the
that point
in.
The graphic designers are like, look.
Yeah, he was. I got a deadline. You're probably right.
I have worked all the hours. Unless you want to pay me time and a half, this is going to be a door hinge of people.
Yeah. That's great.
That's very funny.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, but the Grinch to me, How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Boris Karloff narrating, it's just so good. And a lot of people don't know, this is a little bit of trivia for you. The voice of you're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. Also, was the voice of a very famous brand cartoon character. Do you know who it was?
A brand cartoon character.
Yeah. So not necessarily like a cartoon, but a brand that used a cartoon as its voice. And if I said it was a cereal, would that help?
Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger.
They're great.
It's the same. They're Great is the same guy that did You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but I read that.
That's quite a range he has.
That's a great, yeah.
Yeah.
Cause you go, so if you hear, when he says they're great, you'll hear the same, quite that timbre, that same, So there you go.
I would love to do voiceover work.
Oh, it sounds like amazing. Are you just in your jammies?
Yeah.
It's like these Simpsons people, you know, it's in its 30th, whatever season, 35th season. And the contracts keep go up, up, up. You know, I don't know what the ratings are now, but probably not great. But they're just kind of grandfathered in. And so these guys now just, they make $100,000 a week. They're in their pajamas. It's insane.
I bet you they are recording from their house a lot now.
Yeah, they just have studios built in.
Right. Someone just zooms in and says,
you just
all
send
right.
your file over. Yeah, you just send the MP3 over or whatever it is.
I will say the audiobook was more of a daunt. It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
It was harder than I thought it would be to sit.
Well, you
got to
make sure your vocal cords are lubricated. You can't have a lot of mouth noises because you're very close to the mic. Everything.
Well, it picked up your stomach noises. Like right after he would say that, people can't do this right after lunch.
Right.
Because the mic is so sensitive, it picks up your digestive sounds. You're like, that you don't even know what you're making per se. There's some digestive sounds you know you're making.
Right.
And everyone else knows.
Yes.
But in this, it's like the ones that no one knows about.
Mm-mm.
So.
What if it was a book about digestion?
That would be...
You're trying to illustrate.
Narrated by John Driver.
Yeah.
Sound effects.
And then the duodenum does this. And then you... What is a duodenum? I just know... There's some funny name body parts. Duodenum is about digestion, right? It's in there.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know what that is. But that's a funny sounding. I know uvula. Would that help? I know what that is.
Yeah.
But...
I don't think that's digestive.
No.
We're not smart.
No.
But... We mean well.
We have microphones.
We'll never do you no harm. We got a podcast. Take that, world. Take that, school bullies who said I wouldn't amount to anything. Nobody really said that.
You don't think so?
Bullies weren't that, you know what I'm saying? They weren't like trying to take you down.
Right.
Like, you'll never, I always thought that was so funny when you had like the American Idol winner they would be given some song that was written for them to sing.
Yeah.
You know? And it was always something about, like, no one's going to take my dream away.
It's like, who is really trying?
Yeah, like, nobody.
Yeah.
The whole show is to give you your dream. And then you get up, you know, listen. You get up there, like, you have this chip.
Tried.
This chip on your shoulder. You're like, y'all don't like this aggression
Maybe
coming from you.
Towards the people that didn't vote for
people
you.
People like you, Kelly Clarkson. Don't break away. Don't you dare ever break away. We wanna be here for you.
Yeah, it's I don't know if I have the real narrative of someone. My dad gave me the narrative that I could do everything. That's the reverse for me, is trying to.
Then you run up against the real world and you're like, whoa.
Oh, wow, I'm really not that smart.
Yeah. There's.
Like, I'm more stubborn than maybe the average person.
Yeah.
But that'll get you somewhere.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know. Like, what I do, there's a lot. It's so interesting because I watch these videos on TikTok and they're about TikTok, or they're about the algorithm, or whether or not it's killing us creativity. It's, you know, what it's doing to us, mm-hmm. but they're on the thing that they're kind of lampooning or decrying or satirizing.
Right.
And it's kind of funny to be, because you're in the system and you're talking about the system, but you're monetizing that. So that video that you're saying, well, we got to figure this out. But this guy was on there. So anyway, I wanted to get to this because I thought this was a good topic for us today, because he was talking about, especially as we enter a new year and people start talking about, like, what they're going to, you know, is new year, new me. We've had those conversations before. And so we always do these assessments, whether you mean to or not. So I was thinking about that for me and my job. But this guy was talking about, evidently he's a singer, songwriter, and he had kind of a moment on TikTok a couple of years ago. I don't know his name. I can't remember his name. He's kind of a handsome guy, whatever. And so he was talking about creatives, if they had to live in the TikTok world now. So let's say the Beatles. Mm-hmm. If the Beatles were told, like, hey, these songs are great, but you need to be making a live video from the studio, you know, five times a day to bring your fans along for this experience, or this won't go anywhere. Like, hey, you know, listen, Let It Be is great, but no one will ever see it unless you just do constant wall-to-wall streaming.
Yeah.
And stay in front of these people. Like, it's an odd to think about. Like, even like a recent band like Radiohead, like, they were so different than mainstream at the time. But, like, would they have been allowed to thrive? They would have had to do the most uncool thing you can do, which is go beg people to watch you. And that's not what we want. In the old days, we want an artist to be, like, mystical, like, almost like other, alien than us. Like, I've done shows before where they go, I was told early in my career, if it's a dinner and they want you to sit at the table with them, don't do it. Because, now this may be different in church market because it's more relational.
Right.
But you're kind of told, you want the crowd's first view of you to be from behind that curtain. You appear and you kind of float out there and do what you do that they could never do. And you want to create that distance between you and the crowd.
Yeah.
And I know comedy's about connection, but there is something to that a little bit. But he was just kind of talking about this idea of, like, wouldn't a legacy artist, could they adapt? Would we end up with the same artist? It would be so different. Because basically the people that thrive in this system, they've learned to harness this. It's almost like democratic, but it almost shows us how stupid we all are. Because, like, Albert Brooks said that. He was doing this interview. Albert Brooks is one of my comedy heroes. He would do these very strange. He's made some films that he wrote, directed, and starred in, and they're all just brilliant to me. But he also would go do these appearances on Johnny Carson where he would do, like, stand-up bits, but they were these huge high-concept bits that he had never workshopped, but he got Johnny to buy in.
Hmm.
And he said, he was doing an interview recently on a podcast, and he said, I'm not saying my way was better, but it was better for me because I didn't have to, like, now I would have to get everybody on board.
Right.
And in the early day, I just had to get one guy to sign off. Johnny Carson said, you're funny. And then if you get on Carson and it's a hit, you've had him. It's like you're a made man. It's like the Don of the Mafia said, this is our guy. And now 30 million people saw it. It changes your life. You know what I'm saying? It's so strange. And in a way, we've taken away those guys in suits that said, this is the funny people. But are we better for it? Now it's like, we have to convince artificial intelligence, we have to trick it to disseminate our content out to other people. And then they do get a voice, and I do like that part of it. But it also is just strange, and I wonder what we're doing. Like, what's going to happen to art? The other thing the guy said that I thought was interesting, and I wanted to get your take on it. Sorry if I'm steamrolling. But he said, art, like especially music, and what you do, which is writing, you make it by going away for a little while. So like, you know, if it's time, okay, we've been on tour. If you're an artist, if you're a music artist, you've been on tour, we're exhausted, but now it's time to go write the next record.
Yeah.
You can't do that now. If you take a break, people forget about you.
Right.
So even while you're writing the record, you got to be like, grinding on this new song, fam. You have to be in front of them. How is that affecting your creative process?
Right.
Like, what is the art going to look like 10 years from now? Because these people that are in this washing machine of creativity, while they also have to stay in front, like, what is it going to, is the art going to be better, worse? Is it going to be different? I don't know. What are your thoughts? Because you always talk about going, the dream of a writer is to have a writing cabin. You go away, you write. It's not realistic.
Right.
But in a way, you have to go find somewhere. You said you were looking for somewhere in town to go be your writing spot.
Yeah. Johnny, well, this is odd timing, but we probably should take a moment here for a word from a few of our sponsors.
Sure.
So that's the interesting part for me. To me, creativity comes out of the wilderness to some extent.
Yeah.
It comes out of isolation. I'm reading an interesting book by a Japanese theologian from the mid-20th century, and he talks about the wilderness being a place where danger and promise intersect.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that theme in scripture, certainly the theme even in creativity. And I, like, Sadie and I talk about it. I'll tell her, she's a big Taylor Swift, you know, fan. Taylor's never not on.
Yeah.
And I can't, from a creative viewpoint, and she's obviously a different kind of creative, unless you're wired to put out a new album in some form or fashion while you're touring, while you're doing this social media, you know, Easter egg hunt for all the fans, while you're having this celebrity relationship, you're going like,
yeah, she's going to Chiefs games.
It's unbelievable what she pulls off, and she seems to gain energy from it. But I don't think most artists have. So Tol said, "Is like most artists aren't both that prolific as a writer, and that prolific as a performer." Like, she seems to be equal in both spaces. There are some performers, like, someone's writing their songs, and man, they're just going to go out and they're just going to burn up the roads and they're going to burn up the airwaves. They're going to do it all the time. I think a lot of true writers generally want to find a spot to
recharge away from people, and then you get into your creative space and you get away from that pressure of creating something every day. That's the other thing, is like when Hootsuite and some of these things came along in the early days of Twitter. I was urged to get into that by people who, before I had social media helping me, social media firms helping me, it was like, you need to get on Hootsuite and schedule out your tweets. And I was like, why? And they were like, because you're not funny every day. Nobody is.
Interesting.
And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. So you should schedule these out so that, like, there's not like a week where you go without posting anything. And I didn't think about it. So I would get into a mode where I would just post five things in one day because I'm just feeling funny that day, feeling inspired. And then I would go a week and not post anything. And people would just forget. They just forget you're there. And I don't know if that's not been a problem for people before this generation.
No, but I think you called it democratic. I think really it is democratic, but it's really more technically populist.
Yeah.
Populism is a form of democracy that you are literally beholden to the will of.
Right. We put you here, we can take you down.
It's going to be a mob is one way to say it. Yeah. Again, it's Andrew Jackson was a populist whenever he was elected. Again, he allowed the common man to come into the White House after the inauguration, and they basically destroyed. It was like a kegger on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
And so, like, republicanism versus, you know, pure democracy or populism says, well, we need a layer between and I'm using this, it sounds elitist, but that's how they would feel. Like, you don't have the right to choose everything that happens here in this country. You have the right to choose the people who choose everything that happens here in this country.
Yeah.
Right? There needs to be a layer between you that you want someone better than you, smarter than you, more experienced than you to step between you and to curate those things. So what you're doing
Who's smarter than you, John?
Well, I know. That's why I'm announcing my candidacy in 2024 in the populist party. But no, it's a... I think music has become populism in that way, and art has, because now it is beholden to the demands of the end user and driven then by the streaming platforms that are no longer based upon projects, but based upon streams and based upon singles even. I loved the days and still do. I go and download whole albums of my artists. Like, I can't just go in and get a song. I'm disappointed. You give me a great song, one great song, I'm only going to listen to it so many times.
Do you miss, like, the liner notes, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the artwork. You felt, like, pressure to put, like, something pithy together as, like, artwork or something, you know?
Yeah.
Now it's just like, here's my face, here's my songs.
Right, and I think you're... trying to impress the algorithm feels so inauthentic to me because I get it. It gets it to more people. But you're right. Like when we do book releases or whatever, and we're dealing with social media stuff. I mean, there is this sense of, you can't hashtag racism.
Yeah.
It'll get flagged.
Right, right.
So it's a book about racism, but you can't say that.
But now that's a buzzword. It's a hot word or whatever.
And so they'll take this out. So you have to find some way. And
you got to trick the algorithm.
For me, there's like this sense of, really? Like, I just want to say these things. And I get it. It's a crowded world. And I said, the Gen X in me sounds like someone shaking their fist at the heavens a little bit on it. But you go, hey, whatever happened to the ability for this to have long form value because someone took the time, and there's no time. That's really what has happened. There's no time anymore for your thing to take on.
Yeah.
You know, to take root. Like it's going to have to be now or never. Think about when we were songwriting, even early 2000s, producers would tell us, well, it's been 35 seconds and we haven't got to the hook of your song.
Yeah.
Like I've heard some old Christmas music during the holidays with a 2-minute intro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we haven't even got to...
Yeah, but there's always outliers that you can be like, and then they go, but that guy's a genius, John, and you're not.
Well, correct, but that...
Don't bore us, get to the chorus.
And I agree, my song sucked. I'm not getting at that.
That's not what I meant at all.
But I'm just saying, like...
I'm just glad you said it.
But much to your point about the Beatles, though, how much would the rules have been allowed for what we consider brilliant now?
Yeah.
But they're grandfathered into brilliance, but we now have reworked the rules of brilliance to where... Who's brilliant out there that we're not hearing because they're not playing by the rules?
Yeah, I do think it's interesting, though, and I think this is a positive thing, is that more average-looking people and even ugly people are being allowed to have music careers now. I think that's a good move. I like that.
Yeah.
Because it was, for a while, like, we only wanted music from attractive people, and you don't want comedy from attractive people. You want comedy from like an ordinary looking person, not like a distractingly ugly person, but like an everyday person.
Right.
Because otherwise it's like, what are you doing joking about? You know, what are you doing?
Right. You having no real problems.
Right. 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 But like, we want our music from attractive people, even the Christian music, you know, we wanted, you know, you would be made up. You would be whatever. You'd be packaged. And now you don't see that as much anymore. You just, I don't know.
It's interesting. I do think that there's been a little bit of a healthy... I saw a thing the other day on social media. It was a... she was a meteorologist in some, you know, local market. Mm-hmm. And she was a mom or whatever. She's wearing some pants and a blouse.
Yeah.
And there's some dude that goes on their social media platform that just like, hey, if you don't want people to think you're a man or something, you shouldn't wear pants like that. Like, he's always heckling her.
Wow.
And she's taking the live feed while she's on the air. And it was really awesome. Like, she stopped. She's like, hey. And she named the guy who keeps sending it. Said, listen, just so you know, this is what a real, actual woman looks like in her 40s or whatever.
Right.
So, like, hey, everybody, let's do better.
Yeah.
Well, she finally called out, like, you shouldn't be ashamed to look like a real human doing your job because somebody decided who... I'm going to guarantee the guy sending that.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not
He's
looker.
In his sweatpants, too.
Right.
Listen.
And Johnny was that guy.
Well, she got the weather wrong. You know what I'm saying? It's not about what you're wearing until I get rained out.
Right. And now Johnny's furious.
Ugh. Yeah. How dare you? Meteorology's hard, John.
Ugh.
The study of meteors, I don't know how people do it.
It seems like it doesn't affect us that much.
Right.
But somehow a whole...
Then there's cosmetology.
Oh, goodness.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of New Year's.
Yeah.
I think it's a perfect segue.
Oh, okay.
Into my segment today. Let's go into and we're trying out new music.
John's
every week
quote
right
of the
now.
Week.
Quote of the week here on They Talked About That.
That one again. You've missed every week. Every week the theme song. It does not sound like a quote of the week segment. That one sounds like an Unsolved Mysteries. Doesn't it?
Maybe it is. Maybe I am the
Unsolved.
It sounds
like a cross
mystery.
Between Unsolved Mysteries and like X-Files. Like, yeah. Ooh, spooky. Ooh. Something. Aliens,
Johnny,
this
very,
week?
I'm terribly mysterious.
You are.
This comes from Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Once when a Republican congressman from Massachusetts accused Lincoln of having changed his mind. Mm-hmm. So this is like at the very beginning of the war. Whether or not he was going to issue the Emancipation Proclamation. So this is the middle of the war. 1863. Mm-hmm. Lincoln replied, "Yes, I have, and I don't think much of a man who is not wiser today than he was yesterday."
Burn.
So like they accuse him, "How dare you change your mind?" And I thought, how telling, right, even in 1862 and 3 that we would be in a place where we think it's weakness,
yeah,
to change.
Right, to hold, like to hang on to your beliefs even when it's proven that they're wrong. That's like, well, there you go. He's not a waffler.
Right. When you hold to the wrong thing, I was talking about one of the Proverbs. I put Proverbs around the house for every month. And the way of the fool is right in his own eyes.
Yeah.
You know, that's always the case. When I'm acting foolish, I wouldn't be doing it if it didn't seem right to me.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well, C.S. Lewis had the great quote about, like, we all want progress, but if you're going the wrong way, the most progressive man is the one who turns around first.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. That C.S. Lewis is going to make something of himself.
If he keeps working on it.
I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
No, that's a good quote.
But I think, yeah, I want to be the guy in 2024.
Yeah.
That's wiser than I was yesterday, right? Which means the only way to get smarter is to admit that I have things to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean everything I've thought is wrong, necessarily. It just means I have to be willing to listen and to key, or open my mind to with a key, Johnny, if you will.
Open your mind with a...
to new things. I mean,
it's a proverbial key.
It's not a real key, guys. Don't stick a key in your mind.
That's
it doesn't work. I've tried it. It doesn't work. It doesn't start anything. You can turn it all you want, but that's not how it works. So, yeah, and I'm not going to play the music out anymore.
Oh, you're not going to?
No, we didn't do it last episode either. I'm just going to.
You're going to?
Soon we're going to land on
this. Is this because I was making fun of it?
No, soon we'll land on the fun. It's just less production edits to do.
Oh, that's true.
But soon we'll be into the actual music we use every time. And at that point, then.
You're going to get there because you've exhausted a lot of bad options.
We figured out how not to do it.
How not to do that. Okay, John, let's wrap it up here and let people celebrate their New Year's. By the way, we hope you are with your loved ones and you're looking forward to 2024, because I am, and we thank you for listening. We're going to end this. This is This Week in History. John, it's the same what we call Talk About Then. John, this week, 1845, the term manifest destiny is coined by John L. O'Sullivan in his newspaper, the New York Morning News, writing that the United States had the right to claim the entire Oregon country. And his quote was, "That claim is the right of our manifest destiny to overspread and possess the whole of the continent, which the Providence, capital P, has given to us."
What year?
This was 1845.
Wow.
What are your thoughts on what that led to and the idea?
I mean, it really is inextractable from 19th century American history.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost one of those things. It's a feature. You know what I'm saying? It's not a bug. Like, it is a part of the way of thinking. Certainly. And you have to understand the world, there were still empires, you know, around. The idea, obviously, impeded the rights and the lives of so many, especially Native Americans. And there's so much that happened there to those in South America, Central America, Mexico, during that century of the annexation of, you know, New Mexico, California, that whole area, Texas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there were talks about taking Canada during some of those times, especially early in the century. Here's what's crazy. During the American Civil War, there were true thoughts that the Southern Confederacy, their plan actually was to annex all of Central and possibly South America to make this huge slave-holding empire.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, a lot of the great military minds, you know, were from the South. And so it wasn't just, let's just preserve our way of living in slavery from, you know, the United States. It was to expand the Confederate States into a whole other place. And so that mindset was just replete throughout it, all the way into the late 1800s. You're dealing with the annexation of, you know, places like, excuse me on the date, it could be even some early 1900s, but
yeah,
you have Philippines and Guam, and there was lots of talk always of us taking Cuba, lots of, you know, it wasn't even just the 1950s with JFK and the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like, we were having those kinds of crises in different ways in the 19th century. So, I mean, I think I'm not saying it, there's no excusing it. It is a thing that they inherited in some way. Some ways, there were certainly always people saying this isn't right. I mean, in every generation. At the same time, it's hard to understand. It's hard. We're speaking from the benefits of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's very difficult for us to look back. And so I don't know if I have a judgment of it, except I just think you let history speak for itself, that it was certainly a predominant way of thinking. And the fact that they tied it to religion and the providence.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. That providence with a capital P is just like this idea that, like, we're the good guys.
Right.
Which you can do almost anything if you believe that you're the good guys.
Yeah.
You know, you can dehumanize people. You can demonize people. I mean, if you just go, well, but they're the villains. Clearly we're the good guys. Like, you can, there's an old, Voltaire quote. It says, if they can make you believe absurdities, they can make you commit atrocities.
Mm.
And I think we've seen proof of that in this generation, but I mean, it's gone on. Like you said, we inherited a lot of that stuff where there are absurdities, and if you let them go unchecked, that's the atrocities are next, you know.
I think a key to life, even citizenship, if you're going to be a believer who lives within a, you know, democracy, is instead of trying to convince yourself or others how much God is on your side, spend your life and your energies trying to make sure you're on God's side through His ways and His word. I mean, I really believe that's the life that we live.
Yeah.
If we spend our life trying to convince, like, well, God must be here. Look at this blessing. Look how we took this land. Look how we – sometimes you won't know until hindsight of those things, but you can live in the present on whether or not what I'm doing today seems to be aligned with God's ways. And am I studying those things and asking those things? It's a great thing for the New Year's, Johnny. Mm.
It is. And in keeping with that and the very serious nature of that one, this week, 1917, the Great Bathtub Hoax, which I wasn't aware was a thing. But the use of bathtubs was banned by the city of Boston in 1845. This is one of the many fake claims made by H.L. Mencken in a hoax article published on December 28, 1917 in the New York Evening Mail about the history of the bathtub. Even though Mencken repeatedly stated the article was a joke, the fake facts continued to this day to be reprinted in articles and books about bathtubs and hygiene, and even made their way into medical journals. Other fake claims he made in the article include: the first American bathtub was installed December 20, 1842. Fake. A bathtub was installed in the White House for Millard Fillmore, which is still cited as fact in many publications. Not true. In 1843, the Philadelphia Common Council tried to ban bathing between November 1st and March 15th. So this guy just printed a bunch of fake bathtub facts saying it wasn't as hygienic or whatever, and it was believed as real to the point where it made it into medical journals, even though he said throughout the article,
not real.
This is satire.
Mm.
So
I wonder how many things you said that are fake that have made it into, like, the collective consciousness.
I do think bathing feels filthier than showering, though. Like, I put it on a... bathing is, like, for relaxation. You know, if ever I get in a bathtub, it's like, I just want to soak and just...
I agree. I take a shower after I take a bath.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you just feel surrounded. Although, you're not really filthy if you get into a bathtub. You're not like, oh, I'm surrounded by my filth. Like, what are you doing in there?
You don't
That's
know.
True.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm saying like a normal person, not like you with your barnacles or whatever you're scraping off.
Barnacles.
Okay, finally, John. This week, 1897, French playwright French playwright Edmond Rostand's famous play Cyrano de Bergerac is first performed, and it's immediate success. The play was a fictionalization of the life of the French dramatist Cyrano de Bergerac. In the play, Cyrano Do you know the arc, the idea behind Cyrano, the conceit of the play?
No.
You don't know Cyrano de Bergerac?
No.
Have you ever seen the movie Roxanne with Steve Martin?
Yes, but I was much younger.
That's basically what it is. It's basically, in the play Cyrano, he loves the beautiful Roxanne, with whom he is obliged to woo on behalf of his more handsome but less articulate friend. So Cyrano is this guy, and in Roxanne, he's got a big nose.
Right.
But in basically, he's an ugly guy. And, or at least he's less handsome than the friend. And so he kind of becomes the poet behind the guy.
Yeah.
So this other guy's like, I want to date Roxanne. He's like, okay, I'll give you the words to say. So he's behind the bush.
They did this on, him, they did this on all the show. They did it on Friends.
Yeah. Remember giving him the words. And
Chandler wrote all the stuff for Joey's girlfriend because Joey wasn't smart enough to be with her.
Yeah, it's a very
her.
Common. Yeah, it's become a trope in a lot of shows. And I've done it before. This is true. This is a little story you might not know about me.
What?
So I had a friend. And he was kind of a playboy. His dad was an evangelist, so he's one of those kids that like had like a girlfriend in each city, kind of a guy.
Oh, wow.
One of those, just not a just serial dating kind of a guy. And he was probably 15, 16. You know, he's just like that kid, and broke a lot of confidence with girls that I didn't have. But I wrote poetry at the time, and he was trying to woo this girl who lived in Florida. He was like, "This, she might be the one." But she loves poetry, and I don't know anything to say to this girl. And I was like, all right. So I wrote this guy some poems, and she fell for him.
Come on.
And they got married.
No.
And I swear to you, I do not know if she knows that I wrote those.
Do they listen to the podcast?
I don't know. They don't probably listen to the podcast.
They just dropped a New Year's bomb.
They're not married. They're not married anymore. So it didn't work out. It didn't work out.
She was like, "You don't write poetry
anymore."
Yeah,
you know, it's probably true. Yes, you don't write anything like that anymore. You were so romantic.
Oh, Johnny.
Yeah, I was the Cyrano.
Wow.
I don't think I'm that much less good looking than this guy. But I didn't really have, I wasn't trying to woo her. I was just trying to help
you
my friend.
You didn't feel good looking on the inside, Johnny. Come on. No, I thought I was pretty fantastic.
Nobody's really good looking on the inside.
Have you seen inside of a
person?
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's
so
fascinating.
But Cyrano, yeah, it's great. And if you ever get a chance, it's a great, I mean, I know I'm old, but go watch the 1987 film, Roxanne, Steve Martin, classic film, beautiful. And it's kind of a modern retelling of Cyrano de Bergerac. I highly recommend it. Great movie.
Who plays Roxanne?
Daryl Hannah.
That's right, Daryl Hannah.
Famous for a few years earlier, Splash, where she played a mermaid.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah. So yeah, Roxanne, worth seeing. It's a great movie.
Yeah. You know what else is worth seeing,
John? What's that, John?
Our website.
Talk about that podcast.com. Over 280 archived episodes on there. Click the upper right-hand link if you want to support the show. We love our patrons. And then if you go to the bottom right corner, you can send us a note, which people have. Sometimes they're more of a diatribe, a manifesto of sorts.
Yeah, demands.
Demands. But sometimes it's an encouraging note, which we love to get.
Yeah. We'd love to hear topics.
Yeah.
Stories that you like. Maybe you want us to retell it, expound it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something I read in a history book. You're like, you know what? That wasn't enough.
I want.
Can you give me more?
That was the Cliff's Notes. I want the real deal.
You should check out johnnyw.com for all of Johnny's upcoming tour dates in 2024. And I believe when this releases, it's not too late for you to come to his big show at Zany's.
That's right.
On Wednesday, right?
The 27th.
Wednesday, December 27th, which I believe.
Limited seats.
Yeah.
Limited to how many we can sell. No, it's limited. It's limited to. And then in the new year, I've got so many cool things coming up. And I'm even going on some more tour dates with Mr. Nate Bergazzi on his arena tour. So you can see me open for Nate and get two comics for the price of one.
Let me tell you something. It's one of the best shows I've ever been to. And you killed, man.
Thanks.
It was great.
Well, anyway, come check it out. But all on my website. And I've got 40 or 50 cities that I'm going to be in over the next year so far. And it's growing every day, John. Mm. Like a fungus.
Like a...
I don't know. Something good. What grows?
Touring
like
fungus.
A mushroom.
Yeah.
Like a non-poisonous.
Johnny is a non-poisonous fungus.
I want to say that.
He's
for
a fun guy. What am I saying?
Thank
Come on
you. Okay.
That's low hanging.
Let's end there.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for listening. And Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2024 here on
Talk About That. We'll be right back.
A powerful prayer life does not require hiking a mountain to be able to hear from God. God can meet us right in the middle of our busy lives to help, guide, and speak to us through prayer. I'm Christina Patterson, host of the Teach Us to Pray podcast, providing practical teaching and encouragement on how you can make prayer a natural and consistent part of your everyday life. I promise it won't require hiking a mountain, but you just might develop the faith to move one. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.